And welcome into this latest installment of Talk Politics with Governor Mike Beebe. I am Roby Brock. I'll be your moderator for this next half hour. The governor is here to answer your questions. Many of you have sent them along in advance by using the hashtag AskGovBeebe. And Governor, we appreciate you being in this morning. It's a cold morning outside. Just a general observation, you did not come in your Joe Namath parka coat this morning. I was a little disappointed in that.
Well, you know, I loaned that to Joe for the Super Bowl, so I don't have it back yet.
Has he returned your pantyhose?
Oh, yeah, I've got that.
Okay, that's different. All right. Let's start with some questions. We've got quite a few in queue, and really where we want to kind of start with is I got a late-breaking one just a few minutes before you got in studio about the revenue report. It is out for the month of January. Year-to-date numbers look pretty good, a little bit up from over 1 year ago, 7 months into the state's fiscal year, but the January numbers were kind of weak, expected on individual income taxes, but maybe not so on sales and use taxes.
Yeah, the forecast is pretty much on target, but the individual components are what you always look at, and the individual component with regard to sales tax was a little weak, as you mentioned. It could be the weather. Mm-hmm. You know, we've had periodic bad weather bouts that suggest that some retailers may have had some business closings or lack of business. You always watch that, but you don't do anything on a month-to-month basis. Yeah, I mean, you look at it every month. I look at it every day. I look at each category every day. Every morning I get a report on it. But you try to follow trends, and the trend currently is that we're on forecast.
What are you looking at when you're looking at it on a daily basis? What do you see in there that gives you insight?
Well, I look at it on a daily basis that compares the same daily basis to the same month last year and compares it to the forecast. So I'm comparing it to two or three baselines. What do we expect? What have we forecast? What was it last year? And then each individual category, whether it's individual income tax, whether it's estimates, whether it's corporate income tax, sales tax, miscellaneous taxes, insurance taxes, the whole gamut. And then you also look at on the net side at what's being paid out. What are the refunds, mm-hmm. and what do they look like? How do they compare to forecast? How do they compare to the same date of the same month last year? Those are all kind of baselines that I watch.
You can't control any of that, though, so what do you do with that information?
Well, it tells me whether or not I have to cut the forecast.
Okay.
Because, you know, in Arkansas, we've always, I forecast or ask my people to forecast conservatively, because it's much easier to go up than it is to go down. I've lived through both in my time, particularly when I was in the Senate when Clinton was governor. But what you don't want to do is get behind the curve and wait too late to have to make adjustments in the forecast, because if you do that, then it compresses in a time period decisions that can be much harder to make or much harder to live with. The decision may be easy, but the ramifications of that decision mm-hmm. may be very difficult.
All right, so let's move on. We've got a session starting next week. We got a couple of questions about the upcoming fiscal session, particularly on the private option, which you know is going to be the focal
sure.
point of that session.
Sure.
Let's see. We were asked, I got to find that. Could you explain how adding Medicaid patients through the private option will save the state $89 million? There are skeptics out there about that.
Including apparently some people running for governor that don't understand the budget. We actually already saved that money and gave it back to the taxpayers in the form of tax decreases. What happened was we were able, because of the private option, to reduce the amount of money we were spending in uncompensated care, to reduce money we were sending to UAMS, reduce money we were sending to organizations, moving some people that we were having to pay 30% on for straight Medicaid over to the private option, which we ended up having to pay 0% on. Mm-hmm. The combination of all those moves saved state general revenue in between $80 and $90 million. But the legislature said, you know, if we're going to save $80 or $90 million, let's give it back to the people. So we passed tax decreases in the last session that are graduated, but for the upcoming fiscal year, the amount of those tax decreases, the amount saved by taxpayers and cut from the budget, is between $80 and $90 million, about $86, $88, $89 million, depending on how the revenue flows. Mm-hmm. And so that money's already been spent by giving it back to the taxpayers. That money is no longer available in the budget. If you don't have the private option, then the money that you saved and the money that you otherwise have given back to the people and those folks that are now being paid for by the private option, will no longer be paid that way. Theoretically, they'd go back to straight Medicaid and be paid on the basis of the 30%. And or those folks who were not being paid for uncompensated care because now they were getting paid through the private option for the services that were being rendered will now have to be paid for those services. Where are you going to get that $89 million? That's how that works. But the private option created a reduction in what we were having to spend to the tune of between $80 and $90 million, and that money's already been spent in the form of tax relief.
It's earmarked, but the bulk of it is earmarked.
No, it's already been passed.
Some of it has, right, but it hasn't been spent yet. It's in the fiscal 2015 budget, the tax cuts.
Yes, but when you reduce the revenue coming in based on those taxes and give it back in the form of tax relief, then that reduces the amount of money that the state would otherwise have received. And you've got to forecast that because we can't run a deficit.
Right. I'm just trying to be clear that the bulk of those tax cuts have not been, they're not in people's pockets yet, but they are earmarked
In people's pockets starting July 1st.
Right.
Part of them are already in people's pockets because part of them were implemented in the last fiscal year, a small amount, about $10 million, between $8 and $10 million. That goes up to between $86 and $89 million starting July 1st. And then in fiscal 2016, they did way more than I told them they should have done. It goes to $140 to $150 million in tax relief, tax cuts that take effect a year from July. So they got an even bigger problem there.
But you did sign that into law.
I signed it into law, but I said... They've got an opportunity to fix that next January.
Lots of discussion about the fate of the private option funding going into this next fiscal year. Kind of give me an assessment of where you think it stands at this point in time.
You know, it's like it was last time. It's close. Anytime you have to have 75%, what these other states don't have to deal with a 75% requirement.
Right.
And if we had a 51%, if we had a majority requirement, this wouldn't even be a close question. If we had a 70% requirement, it wouldn't be a close question. But when you've got to get 75% in each house, that's 75 out of 100 House members, 27 out of 35 senators, that's tough to get for just about anything, much less something that might be controversial. And so the loss of one vote here or one vote there puts a lot of stuff in jeopardy or a lot of stuff in peril. So it's just like it was last time. It took three or four or five votes to get to 77 in the House. It took a lot of negotiation to get over 27 to get to 28 in the Senate. And so you got 28 out of 35 in the Senate last time, 77 out of 100 in the House. You lose one or two in the Senate, you got an issue. You lose one or two in the House, you got an issue. So it'll be just like it was last time. It'll be a close vote.
It appears that the Senate is where the battle is going to be, at least at this point in time, when you look at kind of the lay of the land. Am I inaccurate in that observation?
I think there's a battle everywhere.
You think so?
Yeah. I mean, anytime you're dealing with those extraordinarily high numbers, because what happens is you can have a small majority of nine people that stop it. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can have an overwhelming majority of people for it and a small minority that might end up with like nine that could stop the whole thing.
It seems to have some popular opinion in polling that we have done. Would you consider taking it to the people if the legislature doesn't pass it?
No, I'll be gone. You're talking about an initiated act. Somebody might at some point, but I still believe in the legislative process. I still think the legislature is going to deal with logic and money and arithmetic, as I say, or as Clinton used to say. And the ideology is one thing, and you can hate Obamacare and you can hate what they're doing in Washington. What Arkansas did in a bipartisan manner, Republicans and Democrats leading together, is to take something and make something better out of it. It's the alternative to the strict Obamacare. It's something different. And it's now being copied by Republican legislatures and Republican governors across the country, the most recent being Utah.
Right. Fairly conservative state.
Fairly my foot. Governor of Utah said they want to do just what Arkansas did.
So here's a theory that's been advanced. Representative David Meeks was a guest on our Capitol View program this past weekend, and he said that he thought that the battle would be to potentially extend the funding in the fiscal session so that policy changes could be made in the regular legislative session in 2015. Do you think that that might be the bridge to get the votes that are needed, is to make some promises on policy changes? I know you won't be there.
I can't make promises I'm not going to be able to keep because I won't be there. But it's the reason they're having to do this again is one legislative year doesn't bind the next legislative year. So they're always free to make changes. they're always free to tweak or improve or do whatever they need to do to make things fit for the people of Arkansas. That option always exists and would exist whether there's an agreement or not.
So what's your strongest argument for people sitting on the fence or legislators who are opposed to re-upping the funding?
There's not one argument. There's a multiplicity of arguments. First of all, let's talk about the people. You're going to have, by the time they start voting on this, 100,000 people have got health care that never had health care before. These aren't deadbeats. These are working folks that work for people who do not carry insurance, and they don't make enough money to be able to have their own individual policies. These are people 19 to 64 years of age who traditionally are out there that just can't afford, or their employers don't provide health insurance. That's one aspect. Secondly, and a lot of people don't want to hear this, but you know, it's been documented across the country. It's estimated about $38 million is going to be the actual cost to businesses in Arkansas that would be saved if we do the private option. They won't have to pay those penalties under Obamacare. Thirdly, the hospitals are paying for this whether we take it or not. Under what they did in Washington, Medicare reimbursements for hospitals are reduced to help pay for Medicaid expansion, or in our case, to pay for the private option. So the hospitals are going to pay for it whether we take it or not. It's $28 million a year. That's each year just to UAMS alone, and that applies to every hospital. The two big Jonesboro hospitals, they said the $8 million estimate that we talked about that they would lose without this is a conservative estimate. There will be people laid off. There will be some small hospitals that may or may not make it as a result of this. Then there's also the issue of whether or not you want to pay for another state. You know, we're going to pay this. None of this is a free lunch. Arkansans are paying for it. Arkansas hospitals are paying for it. Arkansas businesses are paying for it, whether we take it or not. And I've used the analogy over and over, Roby. I think you've heard me use it, that it's like paying that 18 and a half cent a gallon federal gas tax that we pay every time we pump gas into our tank and saying we don't want our federal highway money back. Send ours to California, send it to New York. They need help with their highways. We're in great shape. Don't give us any of our tax money back. So there's not one reason. There's a ton of reasons why you ought to do this, not the least of which is the actual people.
Let's go to another question. This will be a fiscal session question as well. It deals with prisons and paroles.
Yep.
On parole, Governor Beebe said there were systemic problems, and then last week you said there was an overreaction to one case. Boyce Hamlet on Twitter asked, which is it?
It's both. There were systemic problems that led to two lacks a treatment in the parole system. You know, we had that one case that the guy absconded, which is a fancy word for he didn't show up when he was supposed to see his parole officer, eight times, and nothing ever happened to him. He ultimately committed a murder. Now, that caused an overreaction, but there was no question there needed to be a reaction because the system needed to be improved. And that, so there's a balance in there between being stricter and doing what you're supposed to do and still giving these parole officers the kind of discretion to know when somebody really just needs to be hauled in and talked to pretty sternly before you just jerk them back and send them to the penitentiary. All of this is a balance because what we've got now is 2,700 people backed up in county jails that are state prisoners. We're going to have to open some more beds, and we just have to. I mean, and then we're going to have to pay the counties back because they're absorbing a cost that they should not be absorbing, which further exacerbates, this is something we just left out. You said, what's another reason for doing this? We passed these tax cuts on, and we've got about $45 million under my proposed budget of new money that we could spend, the bulk of which is going to go to prisons to open up new beds and to pay counties back for all this backup that we owe. If you don't pass the option, you don't have that money. That $45 million is part of that 80-something million hole. Now, it may all get redirected. You may be taking it away from other people to find that $89 million.
Sounds like you think there's a bad case of tax cut fever up at the legislature.
No, I went along with it. I signed it, as you pointed out, and I supported those tax cuts. But they were predicated on the fact we could afford them. I would argue, and the record speaks for itself, I've led, I can't vote on it because I'm not in the legislature, but I've proposed and led the fight under my administration for more tax cuts than anybody in the history of Arkansas. Any Republican, any Democrat, any governor in the entire history of our state, we've cut over $1.3 billion cumulatively in taxes since I've been governor, the biggest one being the grocery tax cuts. But we do it in a responsible manner so that we don't impact essential services like education or like public safety with the prisons or any of the other things that the state has to be able to provide. And so I went along with those tax cuts, and I still support those tax cuts, but it's predicated on the fact that we could afford it. The only way we could afford it was we saved that $90 million that we were not having to spend because the private option replaced those costs.
All right, heavy on policy though. Let's take a little bit of a break and ask a little bit more casual question here. This comes from Mike from Little Rock. For the past 30 years, you've been a major force in shaping Arkansas's public policy, either in the state Senate, Attorney General's office, or as governor. How do you plan to use your extensive knowledge and experience on public policy once you leave office, and what might you do with your official papers?
Well, you know, I was thinking about using a lot of that extensive public knowledge at the coffee shop. I'm not going to roll over and play dead, but I don't have any specific plans to do anything full time. I may teach a college course, I may serve on a board or two, but I don't have any plans to do anything full time. And currently, I don't have any commitments or any plans. I'm going to take my time. So I'm going to be a citizen just like everybody else, and I'll issue my opinions to anybody that'll listen just like anybody else, and they'll take that for what it's worth, just like
everybody. What about your official papers? You've given thought to where
they're going to ASU.
Mm-hmm. All right. We got a couple of questions on this about the minimum wage. There's a petition circulating about the minimum wage. The president referenced the minimum wage
right.
in his State of the Union speech.
Right.
Do you foresee something happening on the minimum wage front in Arkansas or even nationally?
Well, you know, I think if people are going to get an opportunity to vote on it, that's ultimate democracy. When the people get the chance to vote. What you always worry about with the minimum wage is, you know, some of these folks need more money to make a living because prices keep going up. At the same time, you don't want to cause the very people that you're trying to help to lose a job because somebody cuts the payroll since they can't afford the increased wage. So there's a balance in there that you've always got to maintain. But frankly, in Arkansas, that's first going to be answered by the voters. On a popular basis. As far as what they're doing in Washington, who knows? I mean, I'm as fed up with what goes on in Washington, D.C. as the rest of
you. You should go to Washington and maybe make a difference.
You know,
you're going to be out of office
soon. People have said that, but don't you think after all this time, I deserve to be able to go home?
Well, yeah, but you've got high popularity, and people seem
to still deserve
suspect
to be
a good job.
A good way to lose that popularity is go to Washington.
All right, Jam from Fort Smith, whoever Jam is. Arkansas's jobless rate's coming down. The state's workforce and the number of employed is well below that of just a few years ago. It's been about 5-6 years since the Great Recession. When will the state's employment levels return to pre-recession levels? What do you think's at work with the labor force exodus that we're seeing?
Well, Arkansas has always run a little bit behind what's happened nationally in timing. For example, when the big recession hit the East Coast and the West Coast, the middle of the country, including but not limited to Arkansas, was a year or so behind the rest of the country in feeling the full brunt of that recession. Conversely, as the rest of the country comes out of the recession, Arkansas is a year or so behind the rest of the country catching up and coming out of the recession. I think it's a timing thing. Certainly we've been hurt in manufacturing, and Fort Smith in particular has been hurt with some offshoring. You know, when Whirlpool mm-hmm. takes their marbles and goes to Mexico, I mean, we need policies that punish the heck out of companies that take their business, their manufacturing, and take it for cheap labor outside this country. That's another problem on the national level that I detest. But what Walmart's doing, for example, is rewarding onshoring again and promising to spend $50 billion, is it, over a 10-year period to reward companies who bring their manufacturing jobs from overseas back to America. And Arkansas is already seeing some benefits of that. We've already announced a few companies that have actually started up manufacturing in Arkansas as a direct result of that. And we're working on it every single day for additional companies. Not just the Walmart initiative,
right.
but across the board.
When I look at the Bureau of Labor Statistics numbers that the Department of Workforce Services puts out, you see the employed Arkansans. That is one of the line items in there. And really over about the last 18 months, they've fallen by 40,000 plus in terms of the number of actual employed Arkansans. Some say that the baby boomer retirements are finally starting to hit. That's part of it. Some say people are moving out of state.
No, we're not.
Some people, the unemployed, have just not. They've given up looking for jobs. What do you think is the combination of factors?
Well, I think part of it is the baby boomers. They're not moving out of state because our population continues to grow.
Right.
But you know, it depends on where you live. I mean, there's some places that are losing population, some places that are significantly gaining population.
Rural Arkansas seems to be what's losing.
Sure, but it's not just rural Arkansas, it's rural America. You're seeing more and more of it across rural America. But if you'll notice, last month's figures on that labor force was up for the first time in several months, and it was up by between 2,000 and 3,000. So hopefully that's a trend where you're starting to see that actual labor force go up. But there may be some of those folks who have actually quit looking. You know, so after a period of time, some people get so discouraged they actually quit looking. I think there's not one factor. I think it's a combination of factors.
We got a couple questions on this, and then I want to roll it into some current events too. Got a couple questions on higher education, particularly for technical college education plans. Tennessee and Mississippi, in the last week, the governors there and legislators there have made note that they may offer a free ride for two-year colleges in those states. Is that something Arkansas should consider?
It's all a function of money. If we had the money, we'd consider it. But, you know, two-year colleges pay professors, too. They pay light bills, too. They pay for equipment, too. And if you're going to give a free ride, then you're going to have to pay for that in another form. And one of the forms is increased state money to those colleges or universities. Mississippi is hurting so bad, and Tennessee has been hurting financially as well. I'm anxious to see how they're going to absorb those additional costs. You know, Louisiana cut the heck out of all of higher education, including two-year colleges. So it'll be interesting to see how they weather those storms when they didn't weather the fiscal storms near as well as Arkansas did.
Do you think, just in terms of public policy, though, do you think a way to make those two-year colleges more affordable through some sort of state aid would be...
I've always thought that additional state aid to lower tuition costs and lower costs for people going to college, both in two and four-year schools, technical schools and research universities, is something we ought to be doing. And that's why every time I get a chance with extra money, we target it particularly at the faster growing schools, because the equity has fallen because they've grown in students and we haven't had more state money going to them. But we don't, I've always tried to funnel more state funds to higher education when the opportunity presents itself. I'm even proposing to do that on a targeted basis, not a lot of money, about $5 million, to colleges and universities in this proposed budget, assuming the private option passes.
We have a question from Jack from Hensley. He says, with the problems we've had with some of the constitutional officers this past year, do you think we still need to elect as many as we do, or should we do away with a few of the offices?
Well, you know, in a perfect world, some of those folks could be hired that are doing ministerial functions. But that's constitutional, and people in Arkansas like to elect their folks. You're not going to change that until you convince the people of Arkansas that some of those duties are ministerial in nature and could be handled by the Department of Finance Administration, or could be somebody appointed by a governor going forward. Those constitutional questions could only be resolved by a vote of the people.
You want to weigh in on the lieutenant governor's office controversy? What are the plans for how that office may be dealt with in terms of filling it or not filling it? And what do you think about the controversy over the staff members staying on?
I'm happy to weigh in. Part of it's my job to weigh in. It appears as though there's an overwhelming Republican and Democratic bipartisan consensus to pass a non-fiscal bill, which takes a two-thirds vote to do, but is apparently overwhelmingly popular on both sides of the aisle, to not have to call a special election for the lieutenant governor, since there's going to be an election for one in November anyway. And if they do that early in the session next week, then I'll be able to sign that, and we won't have a special election and spend that couple million dollars to try to fill an office that would probably only be filled for about 4 months. So I anticipate that to happen, and I'll sign the bill and fully support that effort. As far as the staff is concerned, I suspect there'll be something done about that. I mean, if you're not going to have the office, I don't know why you got the staff. I mean, those are good people. Nobody's trying to be mean to those folks. But at the same time, the people of Arkansas would find it a little bit, unusual to keep a staff for an office that doesn't exist or that doesn't have an incumbent in it.
All right, we've got maybe time for one more fun question here. We're going to roll out just a little bit early here today because we've got weather and we want to let everybody talk about that. Hal Yes, whoever Hal Yes is on Twitter, asks, who will be Arkansas State's starting quarterback next year?
Well, that's a hell of a question to answer. The howl has taken over, I think.
I think so.
Everybody's howling about something. You know, Freddie Knighton looked pretty good on TV in the bowl game. I mean, he's got that combination of speed and elusiveness, and he's got a cannon for an arm if they can perfect his accuracy. But then they've got a freshman over there that was redshirted by the name of Burse that they beat Arizona State and Colorado for. These kids from California that's got a heck of an arm. So who knows?
You got to watch out for those guys named Burris. You know.
Burse.
Oh, Burse. Okay.
Burse.
Just making sure there. All right. Governor Mike Beebe has been our guest for about the last half hour answering your questions, and we appreciate him very much being with us, Governor. Thank
Good
you,
see you,
as always, talking politics with us. I'm Roby Brock. We'll have another installment of Talk Politics in a few weeks, probably post-session. If you have more questions, use the hashtag AskGovBeebe. We will send them on to the governor's office for answering. Thank you for watching.